Let's talk about something that might be keeping you up at night, cybersecurity. According to Vanta's latest State of Trust report, it's the number one concern for UK businesses. That's where Vanta comes in. Whether you're a startup, growing fast, or already established, Vanta can help you get ISO 27001 certified and more without the headaches. And Vanta allows your company to centralize security workflows, complete questionnaires up to 5 times faster, and proactively manage vendor risk to help your team not only get compliant, but stay compliant. Stop stressing over cybersecurity and start focusing on growing your business. For a limited time, our audience gets $1,000 off Vanta at vanta.com/go. That's vanta.com/go for $1,000 off. Because when it comes to your business, it's not just about keeping the lights on. It's about keeping everything secure.
J. Cooper, Josh Norris here. Another one of our MLB prospect deep dives. And today we are taking an in-depth look at the Philadelphia Phillies, an organization, a team that has been among NL contenders for several years now, expects to be a contender again in 2025, and has, coming back from injury, a number one prospect who absolutely, positively, hopefully will be part of that 2025 playoff run. And Andrew Painter. Josh, great to see you. As we do with these, we just dive straight in. And I just kind of want to ask you with Painter, like, we got to see him come back last year at the end of the year, coming back from basically a 2-year layoff almost, because it wasn't a 2-year layoff, but it was one of those poor timing of the world type things where he had an elbow injury, tried to rehab it, ended up having Tommy John surgery. So he missed basically 23 and 24. But now he's back. Saw him in the Arizona Fall League. What did you see from Painter? What are we seeing from Painter now? And what is a realistic hope for 2025?
Well, as far as the second part of that question, I think the Phillies have kind of laid out the timetable that he won't be up before July. They have some sort of innings control thing that they're going to do with him, which understandably, he only pitched so many innings last year, including the Fall League and side sessions, and didn't get into a real game. So the actual innings total he had under his belt is probably slightly more than whatever he threw in the Fall League, but it's not much. So you can't throw him out there in April and say, okay, big boy, you know, go do a full workload. So they've said, like, if he's going to be in Philadelphia, it won't be before July. So that's great, because if they think they are going to be, if they are what they think they're going to be, which is a playoff team, or at least one, you know, contending for the playoffs at that point, then that'd be a perfect, the cliche is, be a great spring trade or a trade deadline addition to your club. It's just pulling this prospect out of your minor league system. As for what I saw in the Fall League, an ace. The same thing I saw in two years ago, whatever it was, in his final start before he went up to AA, where it's probably the best pitcher I've seen in my 12 years at Baseball America. And maybe the third best I've seen in my career behind Jose Fernandez and Gerrit Cole.
I was going to say, I know number one on that list for perennially will be Jose Fernandez.
Right. We won't get into that here because that's just too sad. But that's the kind of arm we're talking about here. He hits what I like to call like the four S's for me. Size, strikes, stuff, and savvy. He's got all those in spades. He's got every pitch you want in the bag. It's not like he's, you know, altered his slider a little bit. Whatever it is, it's nasty now. And he throws it where he wants to, when he wants to, and you're not going to hit it. I didn't reveal my top 100 ballot for a couple of reasons that we won't talk about here. But I put Roky Sasaki number one. If I had to do it over again, I might put Painter number one. I think that highly about this young man.
The thing that jumps out to me that puts him in a different, like when we talk about, and we got this question. It's a very good question I got last year, was asking about Luis Perales, right? During the season, it's like, and Luis Perales dropped off the 100 when he had Tommy John surgery. You know, he was a guy with just the back of it, just had moved on, find out he's having elbow surgery and he moves off. And someone said, well, why does Luis Perales drop off the 100 when he has Tommy John surgery, and Andrew Painter just kind of stayed on the 100 throughout the entirety of his 18-month rehab, you know, rehab from injury, from surgery. And the answer is like the difference between a pitcher who's at the back of the 100 who's injured compared to a pitcher who's healthy is like that. There are very few Andrew Painters in the world. There are very few pitchers who could be this good. And when that happens, and the key thing that Painter's done now, the great thing for him, you know, you can argue that the timing's not ideal when you have surgery mid-season in a year, because it does mean that you're going to miss all of that season because you rehabbed, then got surgery, and then all of the next year. But the flip side of that is Andrew Painter comes into the 2025 season off of a pretty normal, as you can, as normal as you can be, off season. He was able to get back on the mound. And as you said, you saw the stuff is still the stuff. There's not something here where we're looking at it and saying, will Andrew Painter's stuff come back after elbow surgery? It's back. And now he's had a pretty normal off season. They're going to be careful with him, but this is a guy who, you know, before the injury was, as you just laid out, he was in a very rarefied air as far as the caliber of pitching prospect. The guy who reached double A basically in the blink of an eye, our minor league pitcher of the year when the last time he was healthy in 2022.
He's the guy I believe we created the award for.
Yes. Basically, he was the inaugural winner because we realized
I kept pestering you. About we need to be able to honor pitchers somehow.
And you were right, because the thing that we've run into now is the days of the 200 or the 180 inning minor league pitcher who's a prospect is basically over. Maybe it'll come back someday, but it's basically over.
If it does, and the guy probably won't be that good, quite frankly, because they'll be letting him go that long.
And in Painter's case, like, Painter has thrown 110 pro innings, not counting the AFL, in his career. You know, like, so he was pitcher of the year, but when you're comparing him to a, you know, to, I think that year would have been 2020, like when you're comparing him,
2022.
So 2022 minor league player of the year, that would have been Gunner. I'm trying to remember.
I think so. Yeah.
You know, like when you're comparing him to position players, it's really hard from just the standpoint of like, this guy had this guy played 130 games, 500 plate appearances or more. And this guy had 100 innings, 110. But Painter has shown a lot in those 110 pro innings.
If you remember why he got that award, it wasn't just the pure dominance. It was his first full year as a pro, he got to double A. I'll grant you, it's a little easier to do that now with the staggered schedule. But the guys who had done that before were guys named Kershaw, Billingsley, Bundy, and there's couple more that are good. I mean, Billingsley was the worst.
Granky.
The
one with Forrest Whitley flew up, and then unfortunately that's point where he's kind of backed up after that.
Right. Well, I mean, he just kept getting hurt and or suspended, and he got to the big leagues. But he got to the big leagues last year. But that's, I mean, those two dudes are pretty similar.
So let me lay out. I would say that Painter's fastball like has better. Like the velocity is similar, but I'd say his qualities are a little bit better.
So there's 6-7 right-handers with just drooling level stuff.
Which again, so like we can just say like that is the cautionary tale here is you know, you've got to maintain it, right? Like that's a tough thing, and you got to say durability. But what is left on the other than innings, other than getting back on the mound, what is it that Andrew Painter needs or could refine before he makes his big league debut?
I don't think there's much, man. I mean, I think he could have pitched in the big leagues the day I saw him. He was that good. And he could have pitched in the big leagues the day I saw him 2 years prior. He was that good. I've told this story on another podcast. When I saw him that in 2022, it was right around best tools time. And he was facing Greensboro. And their manager had already submitted their ballot. And when that game was done, I had a call or an email or something from their manager that said, change my ballot to him. Every pitching category, him. Andrew Painter is that good. Like, just every category that is applicable, best fastball, best curveball, best changeup, best slider, best pitching prospect. That's who that was.
The thing that, again, if you're a Phillies fan, there's a reason to be excited about this. As you said, this is a guy who we'll see what the role is. We'll see. Again, he's got to get back on the mound. He's got to maintain it. All these things. There are caveats when you're talking about a guy. When you say he's a rookie, he's not even a rookie yet, right? Like, he's someone who's ticketed to arrive this season.
He hasn't even been a Lehigh Valley Iron Pig yet.
Yes, hasn't been a Lehigh Valley Iron Pig yet. But that being said, this is the kind of guy who I would describe, what I would say is the perfect scenario for the Phillies is that this is a player, this is a pitcher who come next postseason, you're looking around and saying, how do we not start this guy? Because he's just like, yes, these other guys have more experience. They have more savvy. They have more, you know, they have more playoff, you know, their composure potentially because they're older, they're veterans. But this guy just could blow hitters away. That's the kind of guy we're talking about here, right?
Right. And, you know, I'll go further out on a limb here. If this guy stays healthy, I think he's a Hall of Famer. Like,
that's loud. That's loud. I'm not laughing at it from the standpoint of you're crazy, but I'm just saying, like, that is a bold, you know, but again, with pitchers, it's about health when you're talking about guys like this.
Health is, you know, whatever. That's the asterisk by every player in the handbook and by every player in the affiliated ball. But I mentioned it up top. I've seen three guys in this caliber. Him, Jose Fernandez, and Gerrit Cole. Period.
And the thing that jumps out about that, when we say health, like, there's two parts of that, right? One is staying on the mound, big one. The second one, though, is like the Forrest Whitley conundrum, right? He's had injuries, but also his stuff backed up. So, like, when we say health, but what you're saying is like, and again, this is impressive, is that what you're laying out is that he doesn't, as you just when I said, what does he need to work on? As you said, he doesn't need to be dramatically better. He has control and command right now. Right. We're not talking about maybe he'll get there. He has it now.
It's the volume and quality of the strikes that really just stands out. And the relative ease of delivery from a guy that size. Like, he was the pitcher of the league in the Arizona Fall League, or pitcher of the year in the Arizona Fall League. I think part of that was name recognition. Part of that is because it's like finding a needle in a pile of needles there. That's a bad analogy, but there's not a lot of good pitching.
He was by far the most talented pitcher out there, but he also did perform. Like, he made six starts. He struck out 18. He walked four in 15 and two thirds.
He bullied guys. And this is the only, he did not get a game in anything that counted. I don't think he got a game in instructional league or whatever version of it the Phillies did. I know he was throwing side sessions to ramp up and make sure that everything was copacetic and boxes were being checked and all that before they agreed to send him out there. But it looked like he had just, like, woke up from a nap for 2 years and boom, his stuff is intact. There's no surgery had been involved. Nothing had happened. It's just, boom, here he is. It's the same guy I saw 2 years ago. I mean, I think there are some things that analytical people will tell you might need to be tweaked. I'm sure that's the case for 99.99999% of pitchers out there. But to me, the ball gets past the bat. And when it doesn't, it's weak contact. Like, I don't know what more you want.
What I would say with that is that the other thing is no pitcher is static, right? Like, you just talked about Gerrit Cole. Gerrit Cole, who was the 1-1 pick, who was, you know, kind of a fire-breathing monster at UCLA. This is the guy who, if you look at how he's pitched over the years, he's tweaked, he's made adjustments. Paul Skeens is talking about, you know, okay, now I'm now going to add a two-seamer. This is, pitching development is not something where you say, I'm 22, I'm 23, I'm 24. This is who I am, and this is who I or ever will be. But again, I'll even go with that. Painter has shown the aptitude to, he has the feel to spin. He has the ability to command and control. He has the ability to maintain his delivery, which are also the aspects that make it better and easier for you to continue to refine, to continue to develop. Because, as you said, he's got the four S's and the fourth one's savvy. and savvy is a key one for that. We could keep talking about Andrew Painter all day. If you want to read a lot more about Andrew Painter, go over to baseballamerica.com. Josh, myself, Jeff, and many others over there have written about Painter over the years. And in fact, you could find that Baseball America Minor League Player of the Year story from a couple of years ago. But there's a lot more there. We thank you, our subscribers who subscribe. If you haven't, you can join them and get 30 scouting reports on the top 30 Phillies prospects. Do that for all 30 teams, as well as tools grades, as well as BA grades, and as well as an additional 10 prospects that we want you to keep an eye on for all 30 teams. That's all up at baseballamerica.com. Fantasy coverage. We have the RoboScout Top 100 is out. We have a Dynasty 500. We have a new 2026 Top 200 High School Draft Prospects to keep an eye on. We have updated draft list for 2025 with scouting reports on all players in the Top 200. So much over at baseballamerica.com. But Josh, as we kind of keep looking at this Philly system, this is the thing that stands out here is number two on this list is Aiden Miller. And Aiden Miller is another really like positive story if you're a Phillies fan, because not that he wasn't a prominent prospect coming into the draft, but he was coming off of an injury. We hadn't seen as much of him kind of in that draft year. And there were questions. And it feels like that the 2024 season, Aiden Miller did a good job of alleviating some of those concerns when it comes to his defense, when it comes to the bat. Not that he was like, oh, this guy's terrible or anything like that, but it's like, oh, he might be a little better than what he was projected coming out of high school. How did you kind of perceive where Aiden Miller is now?
I mean, the thing about Aiden Miller was, you know, part of my job, a big part of my job, is checking in with scouts, seeing who's popping, et cetera, et cetera. And his name started popping and ringing bells in April. Like, this guy is really good. He's better than advertised. And part of that is because, you know, he got drafted where he was because he had the injury during his draft year. And I'll take a little tangent here and say the hallmark of Brian Barber's drafts is risk and betting on upside. If I told you you're going to take a high school right-hander who is 6'7" with your first round pick, a lot of conventional wisdom say don't do that. High school right-handers are, you know, very fraught demographic. Mm-hmm. And then guys who are that big don't necessarily succeed a lot. Well, I think he's pulled the royal flush out with Andrew Painter. And now you take a guy with Aiden Miller who, you know, you had the wrist injury, and the wrist things you worry about with that are, is the power going to be sapped? Well, no, it wasn't. It took him a little time to get adjusted at each level. But he got to double A in his first full year as a pro. Again, not as difficult.
Still an accomplishment.
An accomplishment, yes. But I think the biggest development is he doesn't look terrible at shortstop. Like, the, you know, after the first truncated year, it was like, okay, he's probably going to go over to third base. Especially because at that point, Starlin Cabo was in the system and Trey Turner was a couple of years younger. But he has a non-zero chance of playing shortstop in the big leagues. And that, you know, automatically ups your value by however many points you want to say. And then to say the power is still intact, well, now you've got a potential guy who can give you value on both sides of the ball. And, you know, it wasn't particularly close between him and Painter at number one, but it wouldn't be a bad number one if Painter got traded or something.
Or graduated or whatever. Yeah, and like, yeah, the point I'll make on there is like, if you said anyone was competing with Andrew Painter closely for number one, that's a top 10 prospect for us.
After what I just said, yeah.
Andrew Painter. You just called Andrew Painter a potential Hall of Famer. So like, yeah, yeah, I would hope that Miller, who's been very good, but like, yeah, there's a gap here because Miller's good, but Painter's.
Miller could be really good. Like, he could be an all-star. Like, this is a very top heavy system, but the weight is good weight at the top.
The thing I'll say to kind of tie off of your shortstop comment, it doesn't mean that we're guaranteed that he's a shortstop. Like you said, he's a non-zero chance. But what it also means, if let's say he slides to third base someday or whatever, he's probably going to be a better third baseman defensively than what he was projected to be coming out of high school, because he's been a better defender at shortstop than what he was projected out of high school. As you said, the one thing that we'd say about last year is kind of had a great start in the Florida State League, bumped up to the South Atlantic League, and took a minute to kind of find his footing, but then did, and then earned that very late. Like, just basically, here is Redding, just so you know what it's like for next year. Kind
of, and that point is what I was going to say. It's like sometimes they'll do this. You know, they won't do it for any just org guy who doesn't earn it, but they'll get, hey, here's what Baseball Town USA looks like. Here's why I'm missing Pennsylvania. Here's Taylor Swift's gold record in the clubhouse of First Energy Stadium.
Here's an ostrich who throws, you know, who
here's the best minor league ballpark in the country. Like, enjoy. You know, go find, you know, figure out where you're going to live.
Now you don't have to figure out where you're going to live because now they have a sign.
Yeah, that's true. Find out where you're going to eat or you spend your downtime. But yeah, that's partially why they did and why most teams do it. But he got there, and I'm sure that's where he's going to wind up this year. But the point you were making earlier was, yeah, it took him a little bit. Yeah, you're going to have to get used to this, not just you, with lots of like talented, especially younger prospects. The minor leagues are contracted now. They're shorter. There's going to be adjustment time. And I think I mentioned this somewhere else. There are fewer mutants than there are before. Like, probably a good thing. But, Juan Soto is the example I always go to. Like, he mastered every level like it was just – you dropped him in the Little League World Series.
When you say mastered every level, they just skipped him over
I think I looked it up one point, and I think legally he didn't have enough time at each level to establish a forwarding address. Like – so okay, if your favorite prospect goes from mashing at one level and then kind of spins his wheels the next, be patient. Mm-hmm. Talent doesn't go away. You're going to face
this is short-term patience because this is a player who in his first season played at three different levels. And the other thing I think that's kind of a worthy way to kind of wrap up with Aiden Miller is, as you noted, he had a Hammett injury in high school. But this is a guy who had a very long track record before that. Like USA Baseball 12U, 15U, 18U. Like, he performed against top-level competition for years. And here you see it. And the thing that does kind of jump out now, like you said, if you were projecting this out, and this is our perfect segue kind of looking ahead, he was not going to probably, if Starlin Cava developed like Starlin Cava was expected to develop, Aiden Miller was not going to play shortstop in the long term for the Phillies in that scenario because Starlin Cava is a wizard at shortstop. But now Starlin Cava has been traded. He's now a Marlin. And again, that kind of ups the non-zero chance that Aiden Miller can be a shortstop. But that's one of the things we want to get into here, which is this is a Dave Dombrowski run organization. And that means they're trying to win now. And I would say that that is one of the things that Dave Dombrowski has done as well as anybody, which is he is not a prospect hugger. Prospects can help your big league club in multiple ways. And one of those ways is by bringing in big league talent. We're going to touch on that right after this quick break.
It seems like everyone is either starting a side hustle or becoming their own boss. And you know what they're hearing a lot? It's the sound of another sale on Shopify, the all-in-one commerce platform to start, run, and grow your business. Sign up for a £1 per month trial period at shopify.co.uk/sell23, all lowercase. Whether you're selling loafers or peace lilies, Shopify simplifies selling online and in person. Covering all sales channels, from a shop front POS system to its all-in-one e-commerce platform, Shopify even gets you selling across social media marketplaces. With their 24/7 help and extensive business course library, Shopify is ready to support your success every step of the way. Go to shopify.co.uk/sell23 to take your business to the next level today. That's shopify.co.uk/sell23.
And we're back. So Josh, let's just kind of touch on a little bit, because I'm sure there are some Phillies fans who want, like, Jesús Luzardo is a very useful pickup for this Phillies club. But what did they give up? What is it that the, you know, like that is the risk long-term with this of trading away someone like a Starlin Cava?
I mean, the risk is that he develops a little bit of power. I mean, it's almost non-zero power right now. The risk is that the plate discipline that he showed in the FCL was a mirage. Was not a mirage, and he's, you know, that skilled a hitter. The risk is that he becomes a 15-time Gold Glove winner, and also scores well on the metrics that aren't just Gold Gloves. And, you know, he becomes that kind of player. But here's the thing about that. That's a lot of ifs that I just, you know, laid out right there. Jesus Luzardo has some ifs. He doesn't stay healthy very often. But when he does, you know, he could be at the front of a rotation. And the name of the game is to put World Series rings on people's fingers. And the best way to do that is to get the best players possible. I know I'm making a lot of sense here. And
but you trade. Let me summarize that a little bit, which is this to me, this is, you talked about how the Phillies are willing to take risks. Brian Barber's drafts take, they involve risk. There's a risk here, but I'd say this is a very calculated risk, which is they know they're giving up a great glove here. There are fair and realistic questions about Cava's long-term offensive impact. Is there not?
Absolutely. I mean, that's the thing. I mentioned it on the Dodgers podcast. You can take all the risk you want. It sounds like Dave Dombrowski trusts his people. Like, there are a lot of voices in that room who have been around the game for a very long amount of time who know what the heck they're doing. And it's not just Dave Dombrowski, period. Although that's one guy I certainly would trust when it comes to, I mean, go back to the Red Sox. Who is, like, the one prospect they didn't trade? Rafael Devers. Like, that was a good one to keep in the fold, I think. But I, when it comes to trusting which prospects to pick and choose and when to deal them, I could think of worse guys to trust than Dave Dombrowski. He probably looked at Baseball America's Florida Complex League top 100 or top 20 and said, hey, he's number one. He's at the peak of his value. Let's trade him now.
The thing I would say about this is once you said this is a top-heavy system, there are some other intriguing prospects here, but Andrew Painter's in one tier, Aiden Miller's kind of in the next tier, and then I would say that when we get past that, especially post-Cava, there are guys who are both very interesting, and there are more caveats. Justin Crawford, for example, right? Justin Crawford, son of Carl Crawford, our number five prospect. He's been a very productive player so far mm-hmm. as a minor leaguer. And there's still this one, I would say there's multiple caveats, but there's one really big caveat, which is no one hits the ball on the ground more. And there's the question of how much can he improve that? Or is he going to be like hit with basically no power or very little power because it's hard to have power? You at best you're getting a double when you hit the ball on the ground
or triple. He's fast enough, but the thing is with Crawford, yes, he needs to get the ball off the ground. And I'm not saying he needs to be selling out for launch angle or at least a lot of launch angle. Just hit line drives over the infielder's heads. Not if it goes over the fence, cool. But I made the point at one of our meetings that I think in the last 15, 16 years, however far Fangraphs' database goes back, the only productive big leaguer with the kind of ground ball rate Crawford has run and sustained is Kevin Kiermaier. And
Crawford's not that level of defender.
No, they're while I'm rating superlatives on people, Kevin Kiermaier is the best outfield defender I've seen in my time at BA. Crawford could be very good. He might not be a center fielder. He might be a corner guy.
He might be a left fielder.
Yeah, and that would be a problem because then you become a profile problem. I'll fully admit I could be wrong on this. Like, I could be wrong on any one of these guys, but I'm not as convicted as I am on some of the other guys because there are voices out there who think this guy is one of the best prospects in the game. There are other voices who think he's kind of like what I just said, like a profile problem. And when I'm doing the write-up for him last year, I'm typing it in. I'm saying, okay, he needs to get the ball off the ground. His routes and jumps need work. He might have to move left field. And I looked back at my last year's notes and I said, that's almost what I wrote last year verbatim. So,
but he did improve his ground ball rate by 9%.
To like 60%, right?
71 to like 62.
Yeah. And the thing about that is, you know, you can do that in the minor leagues to a degree because the infield defense is bad, but it's going to get real good in the big leagues. And they won't be able to shift you nearly as much. But if you're going to hit it to better defenders, they're going to catch the ball more often. And that's going to take a hit on your offensive abilities.
If I'm being optimistic, and I'm kind of one of the, I would say, our more optimistic.
JJ, you're the most optimistic human I've ever met.
But about Justin Crawford is what I would say with this is if you said, well, what is his profile? What are you looking at here? His dad was a very good player. His dad was a left fielder primarily. He did play some center early in his career, but Carl Crawford primarily was a left fielder. His father, Carl Crawford, never hit 20 home runs in any of his MLB seasons. Now, he regularly got kind of in that prime into that 11, 15. I think he hit 19 one year. But he was doubles and triples, hitting 300, stealing bases, playing good defense in left field, being kind of a very well-rounded player. That's, to me, I mean, again, I don't think he's going to be his dad. His dad was a really good player. You know,
39 WAR.
Carl Crawford's not a Hall of Famer, but Carl Crawford is very much in the Hall of quite good, right? Multiple-time All-Star, all that. Mm-hmm. But if you said, like, the things that really do stand out to me about Crawford, that you're right. Some of these hits that he has right now are not going to be hits in the big leagues because the defense gets better, the positioning gets better, all these things. But we are also talking about a career 316 minor league hitter. And the other thing I will say with that is it's hard to get to that no matter how you're doing it, right? Like it is, and especially he's not doing this. This is not someone who you say, okay, he started in the Cal League and then he jumped to the Northwest League. And then he went to the Texas League and then he ended up in the PCL, right? Like there's, that could be 20 to 40 points of batting average right there. He's doing this having come through the East Coast, which now Redding can be a good place to hit, but he's coming through a way that is tougher to do this. He has shown the ability to hit doubles. He has shown some ability to get triples. I just think he could end up being a very useful, rounded player, steals bases. You know, he's already stole almost 100 bags in a little over 200 pro games. There's a lot to like here, but there is still kind of a to-do list too, it feels like.
For sure. And that's, you know, your ceiling is accurate. I put the 55 high on him, which is an above average big leaguer, but there's a high risk of it happening. So there's a lot of things that have to go right. But you know, if at the end of the day, he's a 10, 12-year big leaguer who's maybe made an all-star appearance here or there, wouldn't surprise me, but there's work to do. And we've said it for two years now. He needs to get the ball off the ground. That's pretty much
it. And he made improvements. He did, improve.
You know, he needs to keep improving by 9-10% each year would be great. I wouldn't be surprised if he's in the big leagues at some point at the end of the year, especially if the Phillies clinch early.
I will say, if he just improves it 5% more, right? He did, you know, if he can do half as much almost as he did last year, next year, well, then you're getting into the range of he hits the ball on the ground too much, but now you're starting to be in that much more normal range, which that's, again, you're not going to utterly rework who he is, probably. I say that probably because it's amazing. Like, Christian Campbell hit the ball on the ground like this just a couple of years ago. So it's not like it, there's a lot you can do. There's a lot, you know, but again, there's always danger when you do that too, because you want to improve and enhance a player's swing without impacting their ability, their timing, their contact ability, all these other aspects, which are very impressive in Crawford's case. This system does kind of drop off, I would say, pretty significantly. As we get to the back of the 10.
Skipped a guy, and I want to talk about Eduardo Tatis. And I know we have time limit on these things, but I want to talk about Eduardo Tatis. What that guy did last year was monumentally impressive. The big risk is obviously whether or not he can stick behind home plate, because he's a big boy, and he needs to work on not becoming a bigger boy. But that swing from the left-handed side, man, the best way I can describe it is he makes 95 look like 85. And just watching from the side during the Florida Complex League last year was just remarkable. The ease to which he got the barrel to the ball and produced loud contact, just doubles and slashing singles. Like this could be, if he can stick behind the plate, my goodness, he could be one of the better offensive catchers in the sport.
He had a great Florida Complex League season. Not a good one, a great.
Yeah. And then he went to the Florida State League and didn't get
the bat. He was great there.
He hit six home runs in 51 games in the FCL. He hit 5-28 in the FSL.
And I will read off. He went 269, 316, 462 in the FSL.
Yes.
And you may hear that and go, oh, that's nice. In the FSL, that's like, if he did that over the course of a full season, he would have been, you know, probably led the league in OPS, because 270 in the FSL is like hitting, oh, I don't know, 320 in a lot of leagues.
Right. And he's, the lower levels of the Phillies system are not great for hitters. Lakewood, Jersey Shore, I'm sorry, is a pitcher's park, especially in the early going and especially for left-handers. It is murder on left-handed players. Once he gets to Reading, however, good luck. Exactly. Yeah. Good luck all
Reading. No one has ever described Reading as a brutal place for hitters. Pitchers maybe, but not for hitters.
I mean, yeah, I've been there. I've been there many, many, many times. I haven't been there in a long time, but when I was there, it's kind of like you pop the ball up, you can get it out of here. I will never forget watching like Eduardo Nunez take Pedro Martinez to the moon there back in the day. That's how old I am, by the way.
And I'm significantly older, but okay. I did, you know, like, yeah, that's good that we got Tait. I did want to ask you before we wrap this one up. I want to ask you about one non-top 10 guy because he's so prominent. And then I want to ask you what your non-top 10 guy to pick is. But we talked about Andrew Painter and living in the high-risk world of high school right-handers. But they also have Mick Abel, who was also a high school first-round right-hander, who Mick has kind of taken a step back. You know, especially I would say if we're saying that this is when we talk about to-do list, his most clear to-do list is the delivery, the strike throwing has just got to get better, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. And when we talk about guys who are tall and high school right-handers, he's 6'5". He's not gonna dunk on Andrew Painter or anything, but he's a big boy. And that's part of the problem with drafting tall pitchers. And they've tried stuff with his delivery, and it hasn't worked. And last year, it was kind of intensified by the fact that he got really sick during the spring and lost a bunch of weight and had to get it back. It wasn't a great year for him. They've tried all sorts of mixing and matching and changing and shortening and differentiating grips and all sorts of things with him, and it's just not working. And I will give credit to the scouts who I talked to during the course of seasons. For 2 years, they've been ringing the alarm bell saying, this guy is control over command. The strikes are not good. They're there, but they're not good. We don't think he's going to be this guy that at that point everyone thought he was going to be.
If I'm going to offer a word of encouragement, though, on him, he is a 2020 draftee. And we have seen over multiple years, again, it's a cliche, but it's kind of true, right? Which is there are a lot of high school pitchers that it takes like 7 years, you know, mm-hmm. like it takes seven seasons, I should say, to kind of figure it out. Doesn't guarantee that Mick Abel will, but we still got a ways to go to get to, oh, he's got seven seasons under his belt, and then all of a sudden maybe things click. Now, you want to see strides. He obviously needs to go back to AAA. And to be honest, like the other thing for him is like, he's got to just make mentally, it's got to be tough to keep going back out there every time when we really are struggling. But there is still, if he gets his, you know, when he has his strength, there's still the possibility of the quality of pitches if he can throw better strikes, as you said. But who's the guy that jumps out to you as a non-top 10 prospect who fans should keep an eye on?
Well, I'm cheating here because I'm going with a guy who's 11 in the book, but 10 now. And that's Devin Saltaban at second base. That's another, I'm going to keep coming back to the risk thing with Brian Barber. Like when they drafted him, he had never played shortstop, I don't think. And their area scout, Demarius Pittman, saw him kind of messing around in a work. No, I'm sorry. There was a cross checker who saw it. Saw him messing around there before a game. And I said, okay, this is kind of an interesting thing. Let's see how it works. And they've set him out as an infielder in pro ball. And he could very well go back to center field someday. But they said, okay, let's try it there. And it's not been terribly, but mostly second base this year. But, you know, we talked about the bar for offense in the Florida State League. Young man hit 17 home runs in the Florida State League. That's not easy to do. That's Somehow that's only third in the league, which is kind of insane. 13 doubles, a triple, walked 50 times, hits the ball hard. He hits the ball very hard. He hits it often. There's a lot of really cool ingredients to his game that make him a pick to click. It wouldn't surprise me if he's on the top 100 at some point this year. Like, he's going to go to Jersey Shore, which, like we just mentioned, it's not exactly a fun time, especially in the early portion of the season when it's going to be cold. But once he gets to Double A, look out! Like, this could be another good one. And I'll repeat, it's so cool to see an amateur or scouting staff just put their chips on the table and say, you know, we're going to miss sometimes, but if we hit, we are going to hit big. We're going to go ceiling over floor. Because, I mean, I'm not going to break any ground here, but talking to a scout last year, he said, you know, you don't win games, you don't win championships with fours and fives and sixes in the big league. You win them with sevens and eights. And it's the kind of player you want to find.
What I'd also say, and this is a credit to ownership all the way down with the Phillies, is that is true. At the same time, some of that does depend on kind of the state of your organization, right? Which is, there are organizations where you are looking for fours and fives because you need the fives to start. Well, credit to the Phillies. If you have Bryce Harper, Nick Castellanos, Alec Bohm, JT Realmuto, Bryson Stott, Trey Turner, Kyle Schwarber, when you have guys like that, fours and fives aren't that valuable for you because they're not breaking into the lineup.
And you didn't even mention Zach Wheeler or Aaron Nola.
No, I just stayed on the lineup, right? Like, you could go on the pitching side too. But what I would say with that is that that gives you both the ability to take more risks because you're not going to come up to the season where you say, oh, I need, I need just a playable guy. They have those guys. But also, if you hit, either they're starters for you or they bring the value that allows you to acquire a top-tier talent when you need it. So that's a great way to kind of wrap up here on the Phillies, a very interesting organization. Go ahead.
I want to give you one more since I kind of cheated and gave you a top 10 guy. Alex McFarland. Two reasons. One, he looked good before he broke and missed all of last year. But the current trend right now, we saw with Alejandro Rosario and Carson Palmquist last year, is that teams have been able to pluck guys from Miami who have not performed for the Hurricanes and made some tweaks to them and then got them to become fire-breathing dragons. Alex McFarland was on those Miami clubs and did not perform. I wouldn't be surprised if there was a smart player development person or scout or both who saw him and said, there's some meat left on this bone here. And now, hopefully in 2025 here, they get to reap the fruits of that risk assessment. So that would be a guy, maybe a pick to click, a sleeper, whatever you want to call it, who, you know, slept for all of 2024.
That's a perfect way to wrap this up. We hope you enjoyed it, Phillies fans and anyone else. If you're enjoying these deep dives, we have a playlist that has all of these deep dives. We're getting there. We're, I think, almost two-thirds of the way through now of knocking out one of these for all 30 different organizations. There's also prospect profiles going up on the YouTube page and on our podcast feed where we're talking about the number one prospect in each organization. So if you want to hear more about Andrew Painter, for example, we've got even more about him. But for Josh, I'm JJ. So long, everybody.